Look, that's one way to live. But believe me, you're not just lying around if you offer yourself to the divine. It's a shift from indulging the small self to serving the great one. If your inner conviction is, let my highest destiny unfold, or may I be a conduit for good, your life can't help but change. Surprising and even inconceivable events hatch of their own volition. And sometimes once they line up, you barely have time to think straight. The divine is literally using you day and night in the most oddly fulfilling ways, because it knows you inside out. Your talents, your passions, your longings. I mean, who made you anyway? And if you say, great, take all of me, let me serve a divine plan, the universe definitely responds. It won't ignore such a plea. Your whole vibration elevates to a different dimension, sort of like drinking clear water from an alpine stream rather than from a fizzy bottle of Diet Coke. After all, at some point in the evolutionary road, soda goes flat, and your soul gets kind of thirsty. So, let us pray together. Change me, divine beloved, into one who offers myself to you. Fill me with faith and trust to know that you know my deepest needs and longings. Use me for the highest good. I am yours. You are mine. We are one. All is well. And so it is.
In the spirit of surrender, let us continue with our eyes closed, breathing deeply, moving ever more into that spaciousness that is beyond definitions, that is beyond whatever we think we know, but at this great cloud of unknowing that fills us and surrounds us and lifts us into an ever more present realization and experience of the mystery of God, the mystery of love expressing as each of us in ways that we never, ever dreamed of. And so we open to that surrender. We open our reality to that surrender. We open all of reality to that surrender. As we sing together, I am remembering who I am. I invite you, if you're more comfortable, to put a mask over your mouth and sing softly into your mask. But together we sing, I am remembering who I am.
I am remembering who I am.
And from that place of wholeness and spaciousness within each of us, within the one that is all of us, let us breathe in deeply and then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is. Thank you.
Good morning, CSL, Ventura CSL. I feel so honored and privileged to be here. The moment I walked through the doors, I felt such love, and everyone that I've met has just blessed me. And I don't want my makeup messed up, but it's just so touching and so beautiful, everything that has been said, and just the consciousness is so simply beautiful. Thank you. This is an original composition, and by the way, I love your band. Wonderful. You guys are so blessed, and I love you. This is an original composition.
What?
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, that's got to be fun, people. My favorite part was you sing, meh, and then the band goes, bah, and then he goes, bah, bah. Isn't that awesome? They are so awesome. I love that. Okay. Oh, goodness, folks. Wasn't that fun? I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. So we're kind of going from the sublime to the ridiculous here, because I'm going to be talking about something that is so human and so funny to me. How many of you have those cards, like you've got angel cards or tarot cards or some type of card that's supposed to tell you your future, right? And I have some. I've got some from Tosha Silver, the author of the reading that we did. And you have a decision to make, or you're struggling with something and you pick a card, right? How many of you have said, oh, no, do over. So many times. I was at a party once where I actually gave someone a book of the Tosha Silver cards, which are excellent, by the way. But if you don't like surrender, don't waste your money, because a lot of them are about surrender. But I gave her one, and we went around. I gave her the book, the deck of cards, and we went around the room, and we each picked one. And I picked one, and I looked at it, and I decided, okay, just be a big girl. Hold on to it. I don't like it, but I'm going to hold on to it. And then when she was done, I'm like, yeah, I want a do-over. Come back over here with those cards. So I stuck it back in, pulled another one. Basic, same theme, you know. Put that one back. I'm like, well, maybe I need to go home and pull my own Tosha Silver cards. The same stinking card that I picked the first time. And the thing that the card said was, intention without surrender is delusion. Why do you laugh, sir? I'm married to him, just in case you don't know. Intention without surrender is delusion. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that offensive. I'm not delusional. I am organized. I'm in control. I have it in an Excel spreadsheet, so therefore it will happen. Not only will it will happen in my time frame, because I have target dates. Oh. So you're going to burst my bubble, are you? Okay. So maybe just give that up, because that doesn't work. Yeah. It works sometimes. It works for goals. But intentions, you know, what's her name? Diane Harmony identifies intentions as inspirations from the heart and from the spirit, from intuition, whereas goals are... from the mind. And goals are fine. Goals are great. However, intentions are something different, and they often require their own timing, spirit's timing, the timing of nature, the pace of nature, in order to unfold in the way that they are supposed to unfold. And if we push it, we miss out. We miss out on peace of mind, but we also miss out on the great gift that we get when we allow ourselves to surrender to the divine. So let's talk a little bit about surrender. How many people feel like I just said a swear word up here? With surrender. Oh, okay, good. Surrender. You know, I taught a class on one of Tosha's books. It was called It's Not Your Money. And every week, it was an eight-week class, almost every week, when we got to the part about surrender, from then on, it was an ongoing debate about whether surrender was a good thing or a bad thing, whether it was something we wanted to do or something we didn't want to do. And ultimately, we came to the conclusion that surrender is a good thing. But, you know, it's hard for our separate self, for our egoic operating system, to understand that surrender is actually something beautiful. As I was contemplating this message today, this sermon-ish, I thought about how we are always surrendering to something, you know? We can surrender to our compulsions. I had to look up the word compulsion because I'm not familiar with the term. How many of you might have had one or two compulsions during the pandemic? You can just raise your pinky. You don't have to raise your whole hand. Yeah. Oh, see, people are raising their pinkies like this. The reason for raising your pinky is if you want to be discreet about it, right? yeah, compulsions. You know, there were cookies. There was acting like my dog roaming around the house all day looking for food. You know, there were jigsaw puzzles. There was Netflix. Oh, my gosh. Netflix, what a compulsion. And those were very compelling compulsions. But, you know, the other thing that we have is compulsive thoughts, compulsive stories that we tell ourselves. How many of you have a compulsive story about doubt? You don't have to raise your hands. How many of us have a compulsive story about fear? How many of us have a compulsive story about shame? How many of us have a compulsive story about guilt? How many of us have a compulsive story about lack? It's not enough. There are so many compulsive thoughts that we have, so many compulsive stories that we tell ourselves over and over and over again. And the thing is that the more we tell ourselves, the more we see what we believe, and the more that starts feeling like reality, right? And there's really a much greater reality that we are privy to. So I'm going to recommend today that we don't necessarily have to divorce ourselves from our compulsions. Rather, we notice them, but we switch the focus of our compulsion. We get compelled by optimism. We are compulsive about knowing the spiritual truth. We are compulsive about prayer. We are compulsive about praying. You know, when I looked up compulsive in the dictionary, it said something irresistible that we have to do. So what if it was irresistible to pray and to know the truth and to know that God's grace is in everything and that as we surrender, we get to receive it? How about that, people? What do you think? Yeah? Okay. You're going to do it? Okay, never mind. Calm down just a minute. It's warm up here. All right. So, you know, some people wonder, and, you know, this comes up in every class that I teach, and it comes up for me, I don't know, like every day, if not every hour, but why should I trust the universe? Why should I trust God? Why should I trust love when I feel that I have such false control over here, you know, when I'm really making things happen? You know, why should I trust? And boy, we don't know anything. Oh, my gosh. I watched a movie. Has anybody seen Fantastic Fungi? I'm shocked that only a few people have seen it. It is a blockbuster. It's on Prime. You have to pay for it, but it's on Prime. Yeah, and it's about mushrooms, fungi, however you say it. And it's amazing. Oh my gosh, they show all these pictures of mushrooms unfolding beautifully. But the really cool thing that I took away from it was that underneath, many of us know about the mycelium network, right? There's this mycelium network of like tentacles coming out of fungi. Is it fungi or fungi? Fungi. Okay, fungi. Fungi. Sounds, never mind. I was about to do something politically incorrect. It sounds like a karate word to me. Fungi. Okay, that was politically incorrect. I'm sorry, I apologize. Anyway, so fungi. So there's all of these tentacles coming out of fungi, and they're communicating with the trees so that the trees can communicate with each other. And when they showed it under, like a photography of it underground, it looks remarkably like the solar system, with all of these connections, you know, between the stars, the way that we have the constellations. It also looks remarkably like the branches of a tree. And then you think, well, the branches of the tree are a lot like the roots of the tree. And you start thinking, wow, as above, so below. And then you see that the mycelium network of fungi communicating with all of the trees and letting the trees communicate with each other and knowing what they need and supporting one another without any greed or without any adverse reactions. They're forming this community. You say, oh my gosh, this network under here is a lot like our nervous system. So it's not only as above, so below, it's as within, so without, right? That's what it says in the Gospel of Thomas. And we've got nature. We've got a visible, metaphorical, true representation of that in nature. The other thing I was contemplating today too, or yesterday, was, you know, I'm praying for somebody who's experiencing a difficult pregnancy. She's away from here. She lives in a different country. But I'm praying for her, and she's a writer, and she wrote this beautiful, beautiful article about self, the illusion of the separate self. And she wrote about how in our bodies there are, she said 40 trillion, but then I researched a little bit and it said 100 trillion microorganisms in our bodies. And is that self or not self? These are our helpful microorganisms, you know? Which is it? How do we relate to that? And these are all things doing their job. Why are you laughing, Bernie Austin? Okay. Dot's making you laugh. Okay. Sorry. I'm so excited to have people back to talk to, you know? It's like, been really like slim pickings here for a while. But anyway, there's all of these microorganisms doing their job, and are they who we are, or are they not who we are? I would be inclined to think that they are part of who we are. And then when you look at that and you branch that out into sort of more of a global level, are the 7 billion people on this planet who we are, or are they not who we are? They are who we are. They are who we are. So there's that going on too. All of this mystery that I would have never thought about and that is happening all of the time around us, you know, that we are literally standing on the salvation of the earth when we stand on the ground with all of those mycelium and fungal things going on underneath there. So that's why I'm saying, you know, if we want to control everything, we don't really know very much. So why not just surrender? The other thing, the other thing is that we are often bewitched by our senses. We are often bewitched by our senses, and we think that what our senses perceive is reality. I listened to another YouTube lecture that was called, "Yes, We Have No Bananas." Anybody know that song? Oh, thank you. Now I don't have to sing it. Bananas today. Yes, it was going to come out very operatic if I sang it, so thank you for singing it. Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. So what that story was about, I'm like, why am I listening to this? But really what it talked about is how we experience a common object like a banana. We experience it through our senses. We experience the color of it. We experience the shape of it. We see it with our eyes. We smell it. We taste it. If we're pulling the peel, we hear it. If we chop it, we hear it. If we touch it, we experience it through tactile senses. And yet, this is going to sound really weird, but what is the banana without the input from our five senses? Is it just an idea? What is it? Does it exist? Does it exist, people? I don't know the answer. You know, it's sort of like that idea of a tree falling in the forest. Does it make a sound? I looked up that yesterday, too. And what they said and the things that I read is that it creates a sound. However, you have to redefine sound as waves of energy because it creates waves of energy. If there's no receptive orifice, to hear the sound, to have the little vibrations of the bone that send the symbol to the brain that means that a sound has taken place, and then we start to interpret the sound, then it may be that no, a sound has not been created. So, you know, what is reality without our sensation, without our sense organs? Is it an idea? Is it something greater than we can imagine? I don't know if this is helpful or like you should be like smoking something when we're talking about this, but what it teaches me is that our senses are not the authority on what is happening. Not only our outer senses, but sometimes even what we're calling our intuition, but is really our ego fretting away. How many of you ever made up a terrible story about something and then had it not happen? I did that this week. How many of you did that this week? You did too? Wow. Okay. So it's, you know, we do it all the time, and we get into this thing of thinking, a little voice will go off and say, well, that can't be true. But then the senses and the past and our current neural grooves, our current habits of thought take over, and they say, no, it's got to be true because I'm thinking it. I'm thinking it, so it's got to be true. But what if it isn't? I know that my story that I made up today, last week, was so benign. It was ridiculous. It was embarrassing. I told my husband about it, and I'm like, I'm embarrassed to tell you what it really was, what really happened. And I can't tell it here because it's way too embarrassing. Seriously. I mean, you've seen a lot of bad stuff come out of this mouth, but this one's really bad. Okay. Oh, come on. Yeah. No. Yeah. So, maybe later, you know, what the point that I'm making is that Ernest Holmes said that spiritual truth is greater than solid facts, and that whole business about the banana, and that things don't necessarily exist until we're aware of them, the sound of a tree falling in the woods, that they kind of only exist if we perceive them. And so our perception is sometimes coming in and giving us untruths about what is really happening. you know, we don't perceive the mycelium network under the ground. I didn't perceive it. I knew about it, but I didn't perceive it as fully as I did until we watched that movie. But it's happening. It's really happening. And what if the same thing is true for grace? What if the same thing is true for the universe? That there is this network of grace that is always supporting us, that is always seeking our good, that is always encouraging us to do, as what Esther Hicks says, move away from the path of most resistance and move into the path of most allowing. Doesn't that feel good? Who wants to move into the path of most allowing? If you really want to do it, raise two hands. Okay, put your hands down. It's a little stinky in here, right? Okay. All right. So, moving into the path of most allowing. Ultimately, that requires surrendering. Surrendering what we think we know, surrendering what we think the facts are, surrendering into a greater reality of grace that is always for us, always on our side, always wanting to unfold in more mystical and magical and wonderful ways. It means surrender. The question always comes up, how do we actually do that? Is there a how-to manual as to how to surrender? You know, I think we try different things and we see what fits for us. One of the things that one of my colleagues and friends, Reverend Patrick Harbula, talks about is at the end of the day, write down how much you've thought about what you want, right? We get compelled to think about what we want instead of compelled to think about what we don't want. We shift that compulsion over here, right? Write down at the end of the day, were you in this camp of thinking about what you don't want, or were you thinking about this camp of what you do want? Just write down a percentage. I've known about this tool for years. One of my best friends, who's one of his clients, has known about this tool for years. I have to say, I have never, ever written down a percentage of how much time I'm thinking about what I want and don't want. It just seems like too much work at the end of the day to get a pen, you know, and write it down and think about it. No. And it's probably a very useful tool for some people, because I know he swears by it and he does it. But for me, what works for me is to just say for an hour, I'm going to notice where I'm telling myself the story of doubt, fear, where I'm in compulsive doubt, compulsive fear, where I'm saying that my fear is reality, where I'm saying that my doubt is reality, where I'm saying that my guilt is reality, that my shame is reality, and then just redirect it someplace else. I'm going to notice that for an hour, and maybe even if I'm being really sassy, keep a little tally of it. Oh, I did that 30 times in the last hour. You know, I did that 10 times in the last hour. Just keep a little tally. Notice how often our minds want to go down that neural pathway, and then see if we can just kind of redirect it someplace else. Reframe it. You know, one of the great things, we actually heard this in the car on the way coming over here, there was a story by Thomas Keating, who was he brought centering prayer very much into the forefront of American consciousness. And there's a nun who was working on centering prayer, and she approached Father Keating afterwards, and she said to him, "I am terrible at the centering prayer thing. Anybody ever feel that way? I'm terrible at meditation? You know, I'm terrible at the centering prayer thing. And you know, I my mind must have strayed 10,000 times." And Father Keating said, "Oh, wow, isn't that awesome? That's 10,000 opportunities to come back to God." So, if we're looking at where we are straying down, getting compelled into that path of doubt, fear, shame, guilt, whatever it is, and we see it, we don't have to beat ourselves up for it. We're doing it kind of perfect-ish. We're going to move ourselves over into that place and just recognize that, oh my gosh, I've just been given a beautiful billboard that is going to reorient me back to this path of most allowing, to this path of surrender, to the grace in the universe. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? So we can celebrate when we see ourselves out of alignment, because it gives us an opportunity to realign with this, which is what is with we gives us an opportunity to realign.
God.
Yeah. God is punishing me for imitating a karate chopper. So is that. We are giving ourselves an opportunity to realign with that which is most pure and holy and noble for our own specific direct life path that is just incredible. It can't be any other way. Surely you are greater than a mushroom, right? And the mushrooms have an incredible life trajectory, and you are here to express something magnificent, and you get to realign with it. One of the ways that I look at this, too, to keep a lot of the stress and drama out of, like, oh, my God, I'm doing the wrong thing again. Let me get over here. You know, we do that. I hear that a lot from practitioners. They're like, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm a terrible practitioner. Not that I hear it from myself at all, you know, but, you know, everybody does it. We notice what's happening and then we realign. But one really, what's been helpful for me was to remember this opportunity of being in the wrong movie and switching the movie. Chris, you may remember this. Chris and I went to see a Jesus movie. And this was years ago when I couldn't get a lot of people to go see a Jesus movie with me. It was about the crucifixion, and it was not a really good movie, by the way. It was one of the ones where Jesus looks like really, like he's been, you know, working out, and he's really, really buff, really handsome, really white looking, you know. And anyway, so we watched the previews, and then this one preview seemed to go on for an awfully long time, and it was something like SpongeBob, you know. And it was so funny to sit in this theater, which was not very crowded, because Chris and I are going, is this the preview? And then you kind of hear this ripple going through the theater. And I'm like, I'm going to go talk to somebody about it. So I went out, talked to the teenager, shoveling popcorn into buckets, and I said, you know, I am not an expert in the Bible, really. I am a minister, but I wouldn't say that I'm a total Bible scholar. But last I checked, SpongeBob was not in the crucifixion. Although, you know, there was a sponge in the crucifixion, by the way. You know, when Jesus says, I thirst, give him a sponge. Maybe that was SpongeBob. That was, okay. Again. So, I spoke to the manager and they changed the movie and we got to see the crucifixion movie, which, in my opinion, yours maybe was not the best crucifixion movie ever. Yeah. Jesus was really buff, and Mary Magdalene had work done, like her, you know, she was, you know, yeah. So, you don't have to go to a movie to experience this. If you've ever been, like, Netflix surfing or channel surfing or something, you get in something that you don't like, what do you, you just push a button. You just push a button and you change. There's not a lot of beating up, like, why did I turn into this movie? It's terrible. No, same thing. When you're feeling guilt, when you're feeling doubt, when you're feeling shame, when you're feeling fear, it's just push a button. Go over here. Go over here and think about something else. You may not be able to go from zero to 100 in 2 seconds, but at least feel something better. That's a very Esther Hicks thing. It's like, feel a little bit up the emotional scale. Okay, I'm feeling terrible doubt here. Well, maybe over here you feel a little bit of possibility. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I don't know everything. Maybe I'm trying to control too much. Maybe I'm thinking amiss because I have this operational software that's always looking for danger. Maybe I could just let that go for a minute. And then gradually, just taking steps in this direction until you're at a place when you're like, oh my gosh, I am open for allowing. I am open for the grace of goodness. I am open for love. I am open for infinite possibilities that I've never even considered. Spirit, I surrender my life to you, knowing that you know me better than anybody because you're the one who made me. And you're the one who made this earth, and you know all of my talents and all of my passions, and you know what my heart really wants. So, Spirit, take me. I am yours. Yes and amen. Let us pray. Thank you. Thank you.